And welcome to Gravel Notes. The decision is made. Those were the fateful words of Oit Tanak speaking about team orders. And the decision was made by the very El Presidente of Hyundai Motorsport to hold station, to hold back, effectively telling their gladiators, stop the fight. And that was to secure a historic 1-2-3 for the team, rather than the drivers pushing hard and risking an off. You could say, after Hyundai's Rally 1 car wheezed its way into existence before promptly running out of puff, this was the most unlikely fairy tale story in motorsport for a very long time. But the big question, did they need those controversial team orders to get it done? Hyundai might say, hey, look, we're still the people that won the championship in 2019 and 2020. Like, nothing's changed. We're all still here. Let's find out the story. I'm joined today by Tom Howard, our rally man, to discuss. Hey, Tom, a busy weekend. How are you this morning?
You're right. Busy weekend and extremely tiring one, I suppose, to sort of keep your concentration levels up. There was a lot going on in Greece. So, but as you said, you've given a perfect intro to this because it was a fascinating Acropolis rally. Some would say controversial.
Let's get into it. Tell us the podium places first of all. What was the finishing order?
Thierry Neuville got his first win of the season and headed a 1-2 of Oit Tanak and Danny Sordo to complete a perfect podium sweep for Hyundai, the first time they've ever achieved that in the sport. It was also the first time they won three rallies in a row, and it also marked four rally wins for the season, which is their best, matches their best total they've ever achieved in the past. So when you think about all of that and you put it into the context of where the team was at Monte Carlo, it's absolutely unthinkable. It's an incredible turnaround, one that I don't think we'll see again, actually. That's how big this turnaround has been for me. Like, to see how they've come from being absolutely nowhere, and I know it sounds harsh, but the team would even agree with that. They were not quick. The car was not reliable. There were several reasons for this, being the, you know, Hyundai's late commitment to the Rally 1 hybrid regulations and the loss of their team boss, Andrea Adamo, who left in December. So they were, you know, at times, I think the team even said they were 6 months behind the rest of their opposition, the Toyotas of this world and M Sport Ford. So to deliver this result, and not only to deliver this result, but to do it in one of the toughest rallies on the calendar, a car breaker, one that where reliability issues will be highlighted, to do it there, of all places, absolutely remarkable.
Tell me how bad things were for Hyundai at the start of the season. And of course, when you're 6 months behind, your competitors don't stop for 6 months to let you catch up. Everyone's developing forward. So when you're behind in motorsport, it is in any sport, it's incredibly difficult. But how bad was this car that a legendary double championship in recent years winning name like Hyundai that they actually built?
Yeah, let's just take you back to Monte Carlo in January, shall we? Where we had their best result there was Thierry Neuville, who finished sixth, some 7 minutes behind Sebastian Loeb, the winner of that rally. So, and that was their best effort. So Oit Tanak crashed out, but even Neuville coming to sixth had a damper issue, I believe, brake. Like, he was lucky to come home in sixth, while Oliver Solberg was choking on fumes that was coming into the car that made him so ill that they withdrew that car. So that you couldn't have probably had a worse start to the season, really. To the point where there were even rumours rumbling around the service park then that will Hyundai even, you know, will they continue in the sport? Will they just pull out and just say that this is too hard? Like, this is not worth it considering the, you know, the funding that needs to be pumped into this. So that's the situation. That was how bad it was. So that's the context. So to deliver that, so let's remember, they got their first win. They actually got their first podium at the next event in Sweden, but things were still problematic really until Sardinia, when Oit Tanak actually won and got their first win on the board. But since then, obviously, they had their dramas in Kenya, and as Julian Monse said, that was what sort of got them prepared for the Acropolis. But in between them, Tanak defeated Rovan Pera in Finland on his home soil, and he also won in Belgium. So, yeah, it's just been an incredible turnaround. But in the opposite direction, you know, Toyota has gone the other direction. So it's an interesting situation with the WRC at the moment.
And what's been happening in the background at Hyundai in terms of the people and management? And have they been working on speed, or was the focus all about reliability?
So the interesting thing at Hyundai is that there has been some internal struggles throughout the entire season, and purely because they don't have a team leader at the moment. There is actually not a team principal in charge of the team. We have deputy team director Julian Monse currently sort of acting as a de facto leader, but he's not technically in charge, and no one has filled Adamo's shoes. So we've been going from event to event, not really knowing if whoever's going to be in charge of the team, because will they employ a team principal? There have been rumours that it was coming. It's not arrived as yet. So imagine trying to deal with, let's be honest, a really poor start to the season and an undeveloped car without a team leader, and then trying to get all the decisions in place, trying to lead a team in the right direction when you've got, you know, people pulling in other directions is what it sounds like. It must have been absolutely horrific to deal with. And the fact that they have done this, in spite of all those troubles, just probably goes to show how good this team is and how good the team and employees they have to be able to pull this together and turn it around with all that going on in the background.
This was a weekend of attrition, and yet the team somehow managed to do what the other teams couldn't. How did they do that this particular weekend at a real car breaker as well?
I don't really know if I have an answer. Like, it's
maybe they don't have an answer, because they did have issues. They had battery voltage issues, yeah, that threatened to derail this whole dream. I mean, look, it was... the drivers were just dripping with sweat. The cars were overheating. But crucially, if you're walking that tightrope, rather than falling off and the cars breaking down, maybe it's because they've been through so much pain and they've done the hard yards, they've not had the luck, that maybe they've come out the other side of it. And because of the things they've learned on this car and the terrible year they've had so far, when they came up against those issues, this particular rally, they were able to overcome.
Julian Monse actually said that, and it's quite an interesting sort of quote in a way to look at it, he said that maybe we've learned from our misfortune in Kenya. And in Kenya was probably the sort of one of the nadirs, I suppose, for the season, probably their worst round since Monte Carlo. And that had come, you know, sort of after we thought they'd got on top of their reliability issues. But as he said, you know, we destroyed so many things, had so many issues, that they left Kenya, which is obviously the toughest rally of the year, knowing what they really have to fix for Acropolis. And to give them their absolute credit, they did it. They absolutely got to task. They learned from their mistakes in Kenya, and they fixed them. And that's what's delivered them the victory here in Greece, because you don't turn up to the Acropolis with an unreliable car and win. You just simply don't. It's that tough. They were given some fortune in the fact that the two leading cars on Friday exited on Saturday, being the M-Sport duo of Sebastian Loeb and Pierre-Louis Loubre. And M-Sport were the team to beat on Friday. They won all six stages. Like, they couldn't be touched. Loeb was just incredible. You know, I don't know how he does it. He's just some sort of wizard, I think, because at 48, he's just able to carry on winning stages, leading rallies. He actually broke the record. He's now the oldest ever driver to lead a WRC event, eclipsing a record by set in 1991 by the 1979 world champion Bjørn Vestergaard. So what he's able to do is just simply insane. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he continues to do it. So Loeb was unfortunately hampered by an alternator failure on Saturday morning. Had that alternator failure not happened, I don't think we would have been talking about Hyundai 1-2-3.
Really? He was that good this weekend?
Yeah, Loeb was that good. Like, you just simply... he won four stages on Friday. Like, he just was... at times, just... he did make one rare error, and that allowed Loubet to claim his first ever stage win. And this is a lovely story, in the fact that Lube claims his first ever stage win at the age of 25. This is only really his sort of third bit part WRC season. So he's still a rookie. But in doing so, he took the rally lead. And it's the first time. So he won a stage, his first ever stage, and took the rally lead to lead a rally for the first time. I don't think anyone's ever done that. That is truly remarkable. And then he only went and got came into the next stage and won that as well. So just to back up that I'm here and this is not a fluke. I've got the pace and people need to start rallying around me because I might be the future of this team. So it was an incredible performance from Lube. And also we should talk on his disastrous 2021, where he was in an uncompetitive Hyundai run by 2C competition. Really struggled. And this is a WRC2 champion. So he's clearly got talent there. Wasn't able to show it last year and had to end the season early after being hit by a road car while crossing the street in Paris, which broke his hip. So he ended up last year in the wars and also not sure if he was ever going to be back in the WRC again. But M Sport gave him this lifeline and boy, has he taken it. But yes, going back to my original point after that big tangent, I think if the dramas hadn't, the puncture for Lube on Saturday and Loeb's alternator failure, I'm not sure we'd have been talking about Hyundai 1-2-3. I think those two would have factored in that and caused some havoc. Also, Toyota's Esa-Pekka Lappi was quick too, and a fuel pressure problem cost him. So let's remember Hyundai had some luck of their own, but also their car was bulletproof.
Let's see if not the boss of the team, Julien Moncey, mentions that luck in the official WRC press conference afterwards, which they very kindly let us use this audio. So we're very thankful for that. Let's have a listen to what he said after that amazing fairy tale of a 1-2-3.
We have never achieved such a result since we are in rally back in 2014. So it's very nice. I mean, we as Thierry said, we are on a positive momentum. We have to be careful not to be too positive, and we know that we still have to improve the car on many aspects, but it was really important for us, this 1-2-3. We were really attached to this result. I mean, that's the first time this year we won in Finland. I think that's as well the first time we have three consecutive wins. If you look back at the start of the season, where we are really struggling, to say the least, it's very good to be back. We knew we would struggle in Monte Carlo. We were obviously late in the development, in the parts, in everything. And step by step, we improved the car. I was pretty sure it would happen, but because the team was still there, the structure is still the same, so there was no reason we could not make it again. But we were just missing time, so it was not a question of if, but more when.
What do you think about what he said there?
You don't turn into a bad team overnight. These are a talented bunch of guys. They were going to get on top of it eventually, but I am surprised that they got on top of it this quickly and were able to deliver a 1-2-3. Because let's remember, this is a 1-2-3 historic result for the team, and it's come with arguably one of their worst cars.
Yeah.
So, like, it's every way you look at it, it's genuinely remarkable. It's just a classic case of this WRC season, which we are enjoying, throwing up the results and drama that you just cannot script. Like, I look back at the year and it's incredible what we've been through, really. Like, we've had Loeb victories, we've had a Loeb versus Ogier, we've had a roving pair of magical moments that are just, you might never see again. And now we've got Tanak and the Hyundai resurgence and M Sports dramas. Like, you could write a book quite easily.
Given the season that we're having, it would be a book that would have to live in the fantasy section of the library, wouldn't it? You couldn't make half of this up. That's why it's such an incredible, compelling season to follow, whether you're into your rally or whether you're just kind of following it from the sidelines or just getting into it. A brilliant season this year. Right, coming up on the podcast next, we'll get into that big controversy around team orders, which denied Tanak the opportunity to close the gap on his title rival, Cali Rovanperä. And we'll hear from the man himself, the winner, Thierry Neuville, coming up on the podcast soon. Keep listening. Now, Tanak can win the title mathematically. And if you're Hyundai, you don't go out and go shopping and you don't employ a 2019 world champion for no reason. He is a star of that team. Thierry Neuville the winner of this rally, on the other hand, would bleed Hyundai if you cut him. He is as Hyundai as they come, driving for them since the team rejoined. Let's face it, Neuville was the winner. Tanak, who can win the championship mathematically, was told to hold station. Can you please start to unpack this controversial issue of team orders that came from the very top of the company?
You can understand both sides of the argument here. They're on the verge of a historic result. Let's not try and do anything too clever and cause this to you know slip away from ourselves. So I can understand to some degree the team order, but when Elfyn Evans retired on Sunday morning and they had a comfortable gap over the fourth place driver, you could quite easily, I think, have rearranged that order to allow Tanak to win this event and maximise, you know, his chances of reeling in Rovan Perrot. Right, now let's talk about the championship. It is a slim chance for Tanak. Let's remember that. It is a slim chance. But when Cali Rovan Perrot, you know, has another rally where he's not in the top 10 and only salvages 4 points from a power stage, you have to take the most of those opportunities because Cali, you know, yes, okay, this is the second rally in a row that he's had some dramas, but if you look at his record previous, I don't think we'll see him have another mistake or a round like this again. He doesn't do that very often. So you need to kind of, it was an open goal for Tanak that he needed help with to achieve the tap-in, shall we say. Yes, so you can understand Tanak's frustration because he's there, and I did the maths. If he'd won the rally and he ended up winning the power stage as well, so he would have achieved the maximum 30 points. If he'd won the rally as well, the gap to Rovan Perrot would be down to 46 points heading into New Zealand, and there's 90 points on the table remaining. So it's quite an interesting prospect when you look at it like that, because I think even last year the championship went down to the wire and Ogier had a lead, I think, of around 44 points around Finland, and then in the last three rounds he sort of really laboured towards the title, and it went down down to the wire in Monza. So anything can happen in rally. So I think if you're a team and you want to do the manufacturers and drivers double, then probably getting behind Tanak in a situation like there was at Greece, where it was relatively comfortable to switch its drivers, would have probably made sense. And I can understand Tanak's frustration because he will see that as a, I'm clearly the number two driver here. This is Neuville's team. I'm in the better position to win the championship, but yet they've gone with an order to benefit Thierry. So that must feel pretty hard to take for Tanak. And clearly, he was not happy at the end of the rally, saying that, you know, this was a correct decision if it was done from a PR point of view, but it wasn't a correct decision for himself. So it's quite strong words. And also said that, you know, it was a shame that there wasn't a fair fight. So you can sort of gauge how this has sort of hurt Tanak.
But the thing is with racing drivers is that once a month, you know, like I imagine that they get paid on payday. Or when's the 28th of the month? When can I pay my bills? I'm sure it's done like, you know, with a contract that's paid in installments. But let's pretend they get paid, you know, weekly or monthly like the rest of the planet. And like, but they receive the money. They're not writing the checks. And, you know, I understand it because when you're a racing driver in the peak of your career, with the peak of your powers, you know, you shouldn't be expected to think like a team manager. But Hyundai are writing the checks, which these guys are then cashing. And I understand it from a team perspective. Look, we can do a 1-2-3 here. It's doing, you know, it will do morale good for hundreds, if not thousands of team members who work on this project. And then there's going to be one happy driver who's been with the team a long time and one unhappy driver who is a former world champion and not, you know, with all respect to Neuville, the nearly man, which has been the story of his career. So, you know, do you swap them around or do you not? And where does that decision come from? And as I alluded to, Tom, just explain, we gather this came from the very, very top of the company, way above the sort of...
You make a good point. And I have to say, like, you know, you know, the team does come first at the end of it, doesn't it? Like, let's be honest. But in this situation, if they'd swapped Neuville and Tanak, they'd still have the 1-2-3. What does that say about the hierarchy within the team? Don't get me wrong, obviously Thierry has been there from day dot and so has Sordo. So yes, they probably command that sort of respect. But let's remember, you know, Thierry is a four-time runner-up. Tanaka is actually a world champion. So if you're going to go on, if you were going to make your hierarchy on who's won world championships, then, you know, Tanak comes ahead of Neville. So, and in this situation, Tanak had the better points tally in the championship. So it's such a tricky one. Again, I would hate to be in that role of having to tell the drivers what they're doing. At the end of the day, like we can sit and talk about it, but we all think and we all expect Rogan Perra will win this title. You know, so... But is it will this decision come back to bite them if Rovan Perra continues to struggle and Tanak misses the title by, what, 7 points, which is what he lost out on in Greece? Then, you know, it's one of those ifs, isn't it? What if happens? It's so difficult for the team in this one. But I just feel like, given the situation of the rally, if they wanted to maximise their chance of a driver's and manufacturer's double... Perhaps switching Neville and Tanak was the best call. But again, I'm not a team boss. I'm not a driver either. So I can completely understand why they didn't want to risk causing any problems and just settled for the Neville Tanak Sordo 1-2-3.
Let's have a listen to our rally winner, Thierry Neuville, talking about that 1-2-3.
It has been a long time since Spain last year. We haven't been on the top step of the podium, and in between there haven't been many podiums either. It's true that, yeah, it felt like ages. It's a good feeling to be back, to be honest, but yeah, it's my 16th victory in WRC. I won't say we get used to it, but we know how it feels. I feel like this weekend there are special emotions because we've done a 1-2-3 with the team, which is something we have worked hard for over the last past years, and we have gone through a lot of highs and downs, some difficult times, some great times as well, but we never achieved to secure a 1-2-3, and to get it here this weekend feels amazing, and I think everybody in the team, and especially those who have been with me since the beginning in the team, feel very proud and feel like, yeah, another mission is accomplished.
Does he want to say the word team a few more times in that reply? I mean, look, there's always going to be, if his team orders, a happy guy, an unhappy guy.
Yeah.
And he's going to be the guy that goes, you know what, hey, it's about the team, we come together, we pull together. One quick story before we go, I want to mention Sordo, this incredible story that actually they texted him to swap position with Tanak earlier in the weekend, and he claims that he didn't get it because they texted him on his phone 2 minutes before the rally stage start. That's an incredible story.
I'm going to defend Danny in this case. In this sport, they are in extremely remote locations. So sometimes the only way to get in contact with them is via text message. When you're in the Greek mountains or whatever, you know, the coverage isn't actually that great, to the point where I think even Loeb sort of struggled to try and get hold of someone on the phone to help repair this alternator because of the phone coverage. You know, the signal isn't so great. So I can understand how Danny would have missed that, but then, you know, there's obviously, you know, the other side of the story, whereas, you know, would he have missed that on purpose? I don't think so. I mean, some people might argue that he did. To say that they don't look at their phones is not true, because if you watch the coverage, a lot of the times when they're in locations which are perhaps not in the not as remote as the Greek mountains, you will often see the drivers watching the WRC live coverage before they enter the stage, just to see if there's anything that's going to crop up to cause them any trouble. It's quite incredible, actually. You watch the drivers and they've got their phones out and they're watching the coverage because you can learn stuff from it. So that is one of the sort of weird quirks of rallying, is that because, you know, you're going one by one into the stage, you can kind of you can kind of learn some things without, you know, without realizing it if you turn your phone on and watch the live coverage.
Quick mention for Toyota. I think they're sort of 60-odd point lead in the championship, 63 point, and there must be 150 odd left to score. So somehow this year isn't over, which is bizarre. It's so bizarre to start. We thought this was such a done deal. A quick mention, final minute of the podcast, on Kalle Rovanperä, champion elect, Lady Luck, who has been hitching a ride with him all year. She appears to have jumped out of the car the last couple of events because he can't catch a break. but walking his way to the title rather than sprinting his way. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Yeah, that is. And just to say, yeah, Toyota really struggled for pace with all four cars in Greece this weekend. They weren't too flash in Sardinia either, which was similar conditions. So this could be just a weakness of the car in these sort of rough, loose gravel events where it's not quite in the window and able to be at its, you know, at its best, where we've seen it in, you know, pretty much every other round. So that sort of is a caveat to why Toyota were sort of, you know, perhaps not where they should have been. Also, Elfyn Evans retired from fourth on Sunday with a mysterious engine failure, which we don't quite understand, or engine issue, shall I say. And as I said earlier, Lappi had this fuel pressure problem. So there were some reliability issues that came in. But going to your point about Cali, yes, he had to open the roads here, and this would have been the toughest one to open the roads on because of the nature of these stages. So he lost more than a minute to opening the road on Friday, but also his car wasn't quite in the window. And then on Saturday, he's clipped a tree and taken the entire tailgate off his car, done a sort of tried to sort of pay homage, I suppose, to Lappi in Finland with his lack of roof and windscreen, but didn't quite do as good a job as Esa-Pekka did. But yeah, he lost his entire tailgate, damaged the rear suspension and rear brakes. So he lost like 16 minutes to that. So any chance of a championship points row, I actually think he does deserve credit for hauling that thing to, well, I say hauling that thing, hauling his GR Yaris, which wasn't, let's say, in the best, as competitive as it could have been, to 4 points on that power stage. And those 4 points could actually be vital come the end of this championship. So credit to him for carrying on right to the end and not letting this be a complete disaster. So, yeah, I'd say kudos to Cali, but I imagine we'll see normal service being resumed in New Zealand.
The end of this month, actually. Not long to wait. Tom, you'll be jumping on a plane to go to the other side of the planet to watch more action on gravel before the tarmac of Spain, and then finishing off in Japan, of course. Thank you very much for joining us once again on the podcast. Make sure you are following Tom on his socials. How can listeners do that?
Tommy Howard. So you can. I'll try and inform people of anything that's of use from a rallying nature. So
good.
Yeah. Hopefully that, you know, people are entertained by it. But yeah, as I said, yep. You know, stay tuned to Autosport. We're doing the best we can to deliver the best coverage we can for the WRC.
Well, thank you for listening to the podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one.